Session number 14977, Ernest Harvey, final reel 10.
Mr. Harvey, reel 10.
What happened to you when you left the hospital, Mr. Harvey?
Well, after the hospital, I was posted to the town hall at Hartlepool. It was more or less like a holding place. And I was only there, I would think, approximately a fortnight. And then I was posted to the 14th Battalion, which was stationed at Otley in Yorkshire. No, it was a holding battalion, and I was there a few weeks.
Which dates would these be? What time are we talking about?
This was approximately January 45, when I was at Otley. I was there a while, and I went on to a post-corporal's course at Leeds College.
What kind of course was that? What were they teaching you?
To be a post-corporal, you know? And then I passed my course, and then I was made up the Lance Corporal. And then from there, I was posted to Haywards Heath at number 111 reception camp, which was for returning prisoners of war coming back from Germany. And there, we had to more or less have a medical and deloused and equipped with uniforms and what, new uniforms, what have you. And paid and all, I think it was in 48 hours, and then sent off home.
What state were they coming back from?
Well, a lot of them was in a terrible state. Dysentery was terrible, you know. And then the first thing they did when they came in was they had to go and get a bath, a shower, you know. They were well looked after. They had a good bath, and then they were deloused. They had a delousing chamber. And then we were fed, you know, and then I had a medical.
Did you get much chance to talk to them?
Well, in my job, no, because really they weren't there long enough. And the idea was to get them in and get everything done and get them off home or a hospital, whatever, in the shortest time as possible. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was either 36 or 48 hours, you know.
Don't know whether they were debriefed in any way.
Yes, well, everybody was more or less went before these officers who questioned them where they'd been and what have you, and what they'd been doing, and medical, and then they were paid and sent off home.
Your job was post?
My job was post-corporal. I mean, I used to walk down into Haywards Heath every morning and collect the post, and bring it back to camp, and more or less I looked after all the post for the company.
Was that post coming in and post going out?
There was post going in and post going out. And actually I think there was quite a lot going out at the time, because a lot of the prisoners was looking for me, and I was sending letters here and there for them, you know. In fact, I was very busy.
How were you settling now, to all intents and purposes, your war was over? Did you realise this?
I realised that then, that it was over for me, and things was quite good at the time. And, of course, later, when that was finished and it all came home and what have you, and the camp was closing down, I was posted to Sabourne Barracks at Colchester.
What time would this be?
This was late August, 45. I was posted to Sabourne Barracks in Colchester, and I was post-corporal there. Now, I met my old sergeant from the 9th Battalion, Sergeant Blenkinsop, who was now a company sergeant major. And I also met my old pal from the 6th Battalion, Bill Beach, who was wounded in Normandy in the same trench as me, and he was working in the officers' mess. And, of course, we had quite a chat. No, I did have his address, but unfortunately, we lost touch, you know.
You said you were post-corporal. Has that meant two stripes now?
No, I still just had the one stripe. But we always went as post corporal when you were in charge of the mail. And I always remember while I was there, this chap came to me, and he was in the DLI, and they called him Private Gallagher. And he came from Gateshead, and all I knew about him was he used to play in a band. And he asked me if I would be best man for him. And of course I says, well, I says, I don't mind, because I thought, well, I'll get a weekend pass and what have you. And so I says, yes, I don't mind. And I saw Sergeant Blenkinsop, Sergeant Major now, I should say. And he said, well, you need a new uniform for the wedding. And I was got a complete new outfit again. And I was best man for him. But it was a Catholic, at a Catholic church in Colchester. And his future wife, she worked in a hotel there. And after that, I never saw or heard from him anymore. They went to Ireland for the holiday, and that was the last I heard from him.
This particular unit you're with now, it wasn't a regimental one?
No, this was more or less, it was a garrison unit. And what was happening then, we start receiving lots of young soldiers from Belgium. For training, because the war was, you know, more or less finished, and what they were doing was sending all these young soldiers over to be trained, and that came to Colchester.
These were Belgian troops?
These were Belgian troops, but they were only recruits, and then they were starting to train them. And of course, I was getting bags and bags of mail in, and but in the meantime, I'd applied for a posting, you know, because really this was, it was a garrison, it was a garrison town, and it was getting really regimental. Well, I'd had enough of that when I was in the boys' battalion, and eventually my posting came through.
Had you to parade every morning?
No. When I was post corporal, you never did any parades. That was just my job, was just looking after the mail, you know, sort of. Seeing that everything got posted and everybody got the mail. That was my sole job.
So when you say they were regimental, they were beginning to chase you to...
Well, yes, everybody... I mean, I wasn't too bad. I mean, because I had my own small room, you know, with my own bunk bed. But we still had to make our beds up and what have you, you know. But when you were on parade again, you had to be smart, which is only natural, I suppose. You had to be smart. But at the time, I thought I would be better off if I got posted abroad, now that the war was nearly finished. And as I say, I wanted to see something more of the army, like, you know. And eventually, my posting came through, and I was posted to Italy. And on the way to Italy, we stopped at a transit camp in Austria. And now, the selection officer there, fortunately for me, was my old platoon officer, Major, he was a major then, was Major Williams. He was my platoon officer in the 9th Battalion when I was in S Platoon. And when I met him, like, he was delighted to see me.
What date are we again to have we moved to now?
This is May, about May in 46. When my posting come through to go to Whitley, May 46. And we had quite a chat, and he was the selection officer there, and he suggested that there was a job going at a POW camp in Italy, which was at Riccione. And I said, well, I says, yes. I says, I was quite prepared to do it. Well, he says, if you take the storeman's job, you'll have to take your tape down, which I did. I took it down, that was no problem. And eventually, I went to 370 POW camp at Riccione in Italy, which is not far from Rimini.
What was it like in that camp?
Well, as I say, I was company storeman there, and in the stores, I was in charge of the stores. I had two Jerrys who was POWs, like, but I had them in the same place as me in the stores. The bunks was in the stores, and They used to bring all me water and make me bed up, and they used to do everything for me. And I used to have to employ washerwomen. I think there was about 6 washerwomen, and to look after all the men's clothes, you know. And when they used to come in, I used to issue them with soap, so much soap for so many clothes. And it was very interesting.
What were they like, the Germans? Were they happy to?
Well, these was more or less two Romanians. They called, well, I just knew the first names. Like, one was George and one was August. But I mean, I always slept with them and everything. There were no problem, because they knew if they did anything wrong, I just had to mention lager to them and go back to the POW camp, which was just about a mile from the where we were in the town. We were in the town.
So these were Romanians who had been in the German army?
That's right. They'd been forced into the German army, so I took it.
The Italian people you were meeting, what were they like after the war?
Well, the Italian people, they were quite good. They were very sociable. When I first went there, mine, there was quite a bit of trouble. We had to go around in pairs and carry our rifles with us for a short while. But we always went in pairs.
What was that due to?
I think there'd been a spot of shooting. I don't know what happened, but they reckon one of our lads had been shot for some reason or other. And after that, like, we went round in pairs and carried our rifles. But there, I mean, where we were in more or less like in the centre of Riccione, and there was like a large courtyard, and they were all like flats where all the company slept, and they had their own rooms, maybe 2 or 3 to a room, and there was like a large courthouse, but the hygiene was pathetic. We had a large plank stretched across was like built up, and it was across maybe half a dozen large, dustbins, like big barrels of dustbins, you know? And there was this large sacking, like all the way around, and it was fastened up like that. And when I first went there, my goodness, we had to go and sit on the plank, you know? And you can just imagine, like, you're going to the toilet, you know, and then having to go and sit on the plank, and there's about a half a dozen men sitting there, and then you used to move along, and actually, eventually, it got like, it was just like passing the time of day, that you're just sitting on the plank, talking to each other, and having a smoke, and that was the hygiene there, but it was pathetic. When it come to the end of the week, and they were coming empty them, everybody used to disappear. So you can understand why.
Did your health suffer because of this?
No, we were quite healthy. There was only one time when I think the whole company got lice, and there was nothing worse. I mean, you can just imagine, everybody was lousy. What had happened, the blankets had got contaminated somehow or other, and it went right through the company. Now, I always remember the whole of the company, we had to get more or less deloused, and everybody had to be shaved. So imagine going into the baths. They had to parade into these baths, and before you went in, like, everybody had to get, he was shaved, armpits, and down below. And then it was laughable. You can just imagine seeing a company like going in and getting baths just like that.
Is that the total delousing programme? Did they dust you with anything?
Well, yes, they dusted as well. After the, you know, we got dusted as well, and that was more or less it. And then we got issued with more or less new blankets where they'd been in these delousing. And all the blankets had been deloused. We got issued with new blankets.
The company that you were with, were they guarding the prisoners in the prison?
Yes, and they were all DLI. That's one thing I can say. They were nearly all DLI chaps. I think the MAF came from the 16th Battalion, because I remember one of these chaps came, and I'd never seen him. The last time I saw him, he was in the same platoon as me in the signal section in the boys' battalion. and his name was it come to us just now, but anyway, he came, I don't know where he'd been, and he had no kit, he had no overcoat, he only had, he was just as he stood, and I reckon that, and we got on talking, and anyway, I fixed him up with a complete set of uniform and his whole kit, otherwise I think it would have cost him a fortune, but fortunately he got off. I don't know what had been the bother, but something had happened.
How long were you there?
Approximately, I went there probably August 46, and I was demobbed eventually on January 47.
Were they Italian prisoners, or what are German prisoners?
They were mainly German prisoners. They were all German prisoners. We had SS, there was one lager for SS prisoners, but the SS, we more or less, we had those under canvas. And then we had the others was in more or less huts, and we also had political prisoners, and then we had women prisoners. Now the women prisoners was based on the right on the seafront.
And where'd they come from?
Well, I don't know where they came from whatsoever. I mean, I never had much to do with them, but I did notice they were nearly all pregnant, and those were right on the seafront.
Have they been fascists or...?
Well, they must have been fascists or something like that, you know. I mean, we never found out. Our job was just more or less guarding them and what have you, you know. I mean, I never got really to the... I mean, I knew where they were because we had to... Eventually, I had to go and supply them with wood. There was no coal there. Everything was wood fires there. And wood was like gold. Because I had to go out, maybe it was three-ton trucks, and go right out into the country and take an armed guard with me, and there would be, get them filled up, prisoners would go with us, and they would fill these trucks up with wood, and then we would come back, and I had to go around delivering the wood, and I'd have to start at the officers' mess would be first. I had to give those the best, of course, and more or less make sure those had plenty of fuel, and then it was the sergeant's mess, and then of course I used to look after our own place where we were, make sure we had plenty of wood, and then the POWs came last. But when I used to have to go into the POW camp, I mean, you can imagine going to the camp with SS and there was no heating whatsoever, and going in there with a 3-ton truck of wood, I mean, we had to take an armed guard with us, about 10 blokes guarding the wood, because otherwise they would pinch the lot.
Were there any problems with the prisoners that you know of?
Well, we didn't have much problem with the prisoners. We did do later on, because what was happening was, when the start to find out where sort of the zones out in Germany, you know, there was different zones, there was American zone and the British zone and the Russian zone. Now, when the POWs got to know they were going into the Russian zone, that's when the trouble started. They started trying to escape left, right and centre, and there was quite a few bit shooting went off. That's when the bother started.
Their homes would be in those zones, though, would
they?
Well,
they may have been in those zones, but they didn't want to go there because they were afraid of what the Russians, I think, would do to them.
You were there during the winter time. Was it a hard winter?
I was there till, as I say, the beginning of January. But the weather there, when the rain there, it bucketed it down and come down in torrents. And I think everybody had an umbrella. But when it did get cold, it was really cold.
How did you feel at this time? The war was well over. Were you looking forward to demobbing?
I mean, we were enjoying, I mean, really, it was good for such as us because we were only about a couple of hundred yards from the seafront. I mean, in the summer, we were just going straight down into the beach and we were swimming every day, and the food was quite good. The only thing there, I noticed, there was no birds there. No, you know, I mean, such as in this country or anywhere, you heard the bird singing. But if you saw a bird there, you would see plenty of eye ties there with out with guns to shoot it. I mean, their favourite sport there was on the seafront. They would have half a dozen boxes about 2 foot square, like on stilts on a Sunday morning. You go along there, and on each one there'd be so many birds, and then somebody would, the eye ties would be standing, and they'd be lined up all the way along the beach, and they used to must have bet hundreds of pounds, and a chap would pull a lever and one bird would fly out, and then they would start shooting. And if one escaped, you would see right away, all the way along the beach for a good mile and a half, and the eye ties all the way along was just waiting and popping to kill the bird.
So there was no problem with the Italians having their guns, their weapons?
Well, no, there was no problem with the eye ties and the weapons.
Did you get much chance to meet with them and...
Oh yes, I mean we went. Used to go to the open air theatres. I mean there was two open air theatres there, and but it was very noisy. I mean there was grapes flying about and pomegranates. It was very interesting. But the food there, I had that soup one night, and my mate says to me, "Do you know what you've had there, Ennie?" I says, "No." He says, "Well, that was sparrow's broth." I says, "Never in the world." But it was, because the following day you could see them coming round the town, and they had all these sparrows draped across the barrows, you know, with a like a shot wire through the eyes.
Were you doing your own cooking, or was that civilian?
We had our own army cook, and we had the medical chap there. He was a German, but he was quite good.
What happened next?
Well, Christmas time. I always remember Christmas time with the washerwomen. I mean, they made a nice cake. I remember bring me in a big Christmas cake for Christmas, and bottles of vino, and Born and Natalie on the top, Born and Natalie Ernie, and I was surprised like, and of course we used to get invited out to the houses sometimes. Of course I had to sometimes go and collect and deliver some of the washing to some of them, because some of them was outlying districts. Sometimes you had difficulty with the washerwomen, because VD there was really terrible. And I mean, before I could employ any washerwomen, they had to have a medical. And I used to go with this medical chap, and he used to say to me, "No bore, no drip drip," and that was one off the list, you know. And it was really bad.
Was this due to the British troops?
Well, no. I mean, I think it was Rife, really. I think it was more or less it had been with the Germans, like. But the British troops, I mean, really, it was a crime to catch VD. And actually, in the town itself, they used to have these kiosks. I think it was two kiosks, like, and if a chap wanted to go out with a woman, he had to go in there, and he would get issued with the tube of stuff and a condom, but he had to... Yes, he had to put his army number down, and I'm not sure whether he had to sign his name or not.
If they came back with VD, did they have to prove they'd gone through this process?
Well, if they had VD, they immediately went to hospital, and they had all the pay was stopped more or less, and they didn't get anything the time they were away. I mean, I used to have to indent for the cigarettes every week. I used to supply them with, used to get 50 cigarettes and 2 bars of chocolate every week, and we used to indent for them. I used to see the quartermaster and tell them how much I wanted. And of course, you guarantee every week it would be about 8 or 9 times as many fags as what was required.
This was due to people in hospital who
were
lousy?
Well, this was due to people who'd gone into hospital, like, and of course, when we used to get newcomers in or anybody who'd really needed them, then we used to issue with them. You know, it was left to my discretion how I issued it out.
Were a lot of soldiers going down with VD?
Oh, yes, yes. I would say every week there would be a 1,500 weight going into hospital. It was really, it was pathetic. And of course they had to trace, tell who they'd been with, and they had to be traced, and you know, eventually I think they started to get on top of it.
Was it very effective, the treatment, or the things they had to go through at the beginning?
Yes, it was very effective, I think, the treatment, what they got like, and they used to keep it very quiet. You could soon tell, you know, it was just like, God bless you, that some of the old soldiers had had it quite a few times, I think, and it was, they were accustomed to it.
The unit as a whole, there must have been some men who were tired of army life at this point. Were they showing this in the way they behaved?
No, I don't think so, because really, I mean, they were doing guard duties, and at that time they had plenty of loot time, you know, they could go swimming. I mean, life was pretty good there. I mean, there was plenty of places where they could go to for drinks and such as that, and theatres.
Where did you go next?
From there, when it come to January, me G-Mob came through, and this was about the 1st of January, 47, and the weather was terrible. And on the way back, we stayed at this transit camp, and we had to stay there because the weather was that bad. It was about 4 foot of snow, and it was that cold. All the bunk beds there had been burned, and nearly all the floorboards had been burned. And actually, I think we spent that best part of our time in the cookhouse just trying to keep warm. And eventually, after that, we set off by train on the way home.
Where was this transit camp?
In Austria. I just can't name the place now. It was somewhere in Austria, this transit camp. And then we turned, and I was on this ship called Victoria. And then I went to Aldershot, where we were issued with our demob suits, shoes, etc.
Did you get medicals?
No, not to my knowledge. No, I never get no medicals. We just more or less demobbed, and that was it. No, I can't remember having a medical.
Was there any forms to complete or paperwork to do before you came out?
No. We just more or less had to sign our hand, a release form, saying how that, you know. Actually, I came home in the agent service group number 46. That was in January 47.
When you'd got your civilian clothing, was there anyone at the camp or at the place that you were demobbed outside asking you if you would sell it or?
No, I don't think so.
This happened
in
one or two places,
yes,
evidently.
No, I don't think so, no. Well, I don't think I would have sold it. I mean, I was just too glad to get into it. I don't know.
Where did you go after demob?
Well, I came home, and after I'd been home about a couple of months, they sent word from me at the store, was I going back there? And, of course, eventually I did go back to the store.
How did you settle down after this long spell in the army?
Well, it was really funny, really. I fancied going back into the army somehow or other, you know. But after I got back to work and got settled down, I was okay. I was quite happy to be back to work.
Was your health good after the army?
Yes, my health was very good then. Well, I mean, the type of work I was doing then, I mean, I was in the furniture and hardware shop at the Co-op at the Market Street, Hetton. And I mean, I was handling big rolls of canvas and carpets, And I mean, I was cutting yards and yards of corporal matting. I mean, the roll of canvas was, I mean, those was quite heavy. But you got used to humping them about. And then there was furniture. I mean, bedroom suites.
Did you keep in touch with the Veterans Associations?
I didn't, no, I didn't. Actually, I think when I came out, all you wanted to do was when you came out of the forces, you wanted to forget all about it. And it was only after years after, you know, I felt like trying to find out where one or two of the chaps were, and then I found it was difficult. I seemed to lose touch with all of them.
Looking back on your army life, what was the most outstanding part of it for you?
In what way? Do you mean during the war?
Relationships with the other people or some event?
Oh, I think the cornfield, that was terrible. Something, I mean, you never forget. That was pitiful, that. That and Gale was the most outstanding, you know.